weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Beto Da Silva for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, September 25th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Alan Colley is with us to chat Association Football as Europa League action sees Manchester United host Twente in the Erik ten Hag Derby. We'll also hear from Chief Football Officer Mark Canham of the FAI, who was speaking to Tony O'Donoghue. Colm Keyes brings us the latest Gaelic Games stories, and we'll hear from both the Ireland and New Zealand camps ahead of their women's rugby clash in Canada. We'll also round up all of today's sports news headlines, plus we have the chance for you to win a copy of EA Sports FC 25. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or we are on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. Welcome along to an hour of sport here on 2FM. Alan Colley is already in studio. Excited for an hour of sport, as always, Alan.
As always, Shane, yeah. How are you? Good to see you.
I'm very well. Are you a gaming man? Are you?
No.
No?
Okay. No interest whatsoever. I just don't get it at all, Shane. Never have, never will. And I don't even want my young fella to get it.
Well, for those who do enjoy a bit of gaming... And if you are a football fan and indeed love gaming, unlike Alan Colley, you'll know that EA Sports FC 25 is launching this Friday. And you might also know that we've teamed up with EA Sports to give away a copy of the game every day this week. You can experience unrivaled authenticity in FC 25 with the most true-to-life experience of football's biggest competitions, clubs and stars, with over 19,000 fully licensed players across more than 700 teams in 120-plus stadiums and over 30 leagues across world football, including our very own SSE Electricity League. So, to celebrate the launch of EA Sports FC 25, we want to give you the chance to win a copy every day this week, plus on Friday show. We'll even throw in an Ireland jersey with the final prize too. So, to be in with a chance to win today, all you have to do is answer the following question. Which team are the current UEFA Europa League champions? Is it Blackburn Rovers or Atalanta? Text your answer, name and email address to 51552 right now, and we'll announce the winner before the end of the show. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for all of the details and regulations. Blackburn or Atalanta? No hints, Alan. No hints. We've other news headlines to get through before we turn our attention back to football. And there was good news for paracycling. Two duos, I should say. Ireland has won two medals at the Paracycling World Championships in Zurich. Katie George Dunleavy and pilot Linda Kelly took gold after successfully defending their title in the Women's B Road Race. It's a sixth world title for Dunleavy. The pair won gold in the time trial on Sunday. Josephine Helian and her pilot Eve McChrystal were also on the podium. They took bronze in what was McChrystal's last race as she retires from the sport. In horse racing, Jewel Stairs hurdle winner Flooring Porter put up a brilliant front-running display to win the Guinness Kerry National Atlas Stole this afternoon. With Keith Donoghue in the saddle, Flooring Porter eased down near the line as he coasted home for a 4 1/4 length win for trainer Gavin Cromwell.
This is the second last. Flooring Porter safely over. Has just one fence left to jump as Aronsu Daly landed running in second. But coming to the final fence, it's Flooring Porter. Flooring Porter is over the last and clear from Aronsu Daly on the run. And Flooring Porter from Aronsu Daly. Flooring Porter is all class at the Guinness Kerry National. Has galloped them into the ground for Kate Donoghue and Gavin Cromwell, second best Aronsu.
Gavin, had your moments worked?
I've plenty of moments worried to know he missed the fourth last both times. Listen, it was after going hard and soft ground, and sort of always concerned that his jumping might let him down. He is, I suppose, his second season. Obviously, he hasn't had that many runs over fences. He's only his fifth run over fences. Brilliant.
But he was so clear at halfway, and he seemed to be in his comfort zone too.
Yeah, look, it's easy to be clear that distance clear, but to maintain it is difficult. But he's relentless. He has a huge engine, and he gets into that rhythm, and you know, he's very hard to take back.
And for a horse that cost $4,000, he's now won over 900,000. It's the stuff of dreams, and it's brilliant to see scenes like this and the lads enjoying it so much.
Yeah, he's been a horse of a lifetime, you know, for me and for the lads. And please God, he's not finished with it.
Classy Porter, floors rivals in the Kerry Nationals. So very well done to Keith Dunhill, Gavin Cromwell there at the Harvest Festival, the highlight of the Harvest Festival, the Guinness Kerry National. Elsewhere, GA clubs and counties are said to be the biggest beneficiaries from the Community Sport Facilities Fund after government announced they will receive just under 100 million, close to 97 million of the 230 million funding. Association football teams at League of Ireland and grassroots level were the second biggest beneficiaries and will receive over 41 million worth of funding. Golf received 11.4 million, while rugby was allocated almost 10 million. Tennis received funding of 6.5 million, with athletics receiving 4 million from 29 applicants. A total of 230 million euro in sports capital grants announced by the government for clubs and facilities around the country today. This is the largest ever figure and 50% higher than 2 years ago. Some 1,996 separate grants have been approved, covering 40 different sports. GA clubs and counties, as I mentioned, receiving close to 97 million. We'll have more on that actually with GA correspondent with the Irish Independent, Colm Keyes, later, and I will be picking Alan Cawley's brain on the football side of things. Speaking of the football side of things, our own soccer correspondent Tony Donoghue was speaking to the FAI Chief Football Officer Mark Canham earlier today.
Mark, as I understand, your job title has changed. You're now Chief Football Officer. So does that require a change of position from you, or what's the difference?
No, my role is everything from grassroots to international. So I would say it's more of an evolution of my job and my responsibilities that's broadened over the time I've been in the association. And then in more recent times, over the course of last year, having line management responsibility of the head coaches of the senior men's and women. So really it's just a recognition of the job I've been doing for a period of time, as opposed to a sudden change at this point.
But still, one of the most important functions of your job is to deliver this Football Pathways programme. Now, you introduced us to it earlier in the year. What progress have you seen being made in the last 9 months or so?
So there's lots of progress being made, more so in the background, I guess. We're continuing to work with the game, people in the game, getting their feedback and learning from them and getting all our plans. Ultimately, we want to develop good participation experiences, good pathways for players and ultimately performance in this stadium for our senior team. So we've identified 11 key areas that we're focusing on, and we've got a number of people that are spearheading those actions to deliver, and we're working with people in the game to get feedback to help create what that looks like, also people within the association to help deliver that over the course of the next 12 to 18 months.
One of the sticking points, it seemed, was the calendar year. You wanted to try and get all the leagues aligned to the calendar year season, if you like, or you wanted to see it over a year. And there seems to be continuing opposition to that.
So the first thing I would say is it's the whole game plan, so it's for the benefit of everyone in the game and every part of the game. I think that's a key point. And the second thing is we've identified 11 areas, and the calendar is one of 11 areas. So there's lots of progress and positivity about all of the work we're doing. The calendar is one that the game, through the consultation that we did with the game, said that we need to do about aligning that. And over the course of the last few months, as we've worked with clubs, leagues and different parts of the game, I think there's a greater understanding of what we're proposing, and we've still got a bit of work to do over the course of the next few months to continue to speak to people to show what that calendar looks like for the adult game, and also what a new varied games programme for children's football looks like to help increase that understanding as we move forwards.
There always seems to be a perception that there's a crisis just around the corner in the FAI though. I mean, you had issues with Meath Girls and the DDSL, you had issues with Limerick football and referees. Will you ever see a period of quiet in the association?
That would be nice, of course. Yeah, we obviously, the proximity of some of those challenges always focuses the attention of certain people. The job of this Pathways Plan is to focus on the future, so we have to make sure that we keep our eye on the future as well as the short-term challenges. There's a lot of people working hard in the game, all around the game, outside the association, in the association, to try and work through those challenges. The Football Pathways Plan is really about the future of Irish football, so we need to keep focused on dealing with the here and now, but also dealing with the future.
But when you have a situation like Dundalk, the second most successful club in the history of the game in Ireland, almost going to the wall and being on the brink, you might say, it makes it difficult for people to, I suppose, have credibility for the plans that you have in place.
Yeah, I understand your point and your question. First of all, it's a difficult situation, obviously, for the club and staff and players, and pleased that there's been some positive progress to try and resolve that moving forward. We don't want that to ever happen now or in the future. We know that we need a strong league and a strong set of clubs to help develop the game in Ireland, both domestically and also ultimately for our international teams in the future. So yeah, of course we have to deal with those issues and take them on in a positive way, but we also need to keep focusing on the future, and that's what the Football Pathways Plan is trying to do.
So a wide-ranging conversation there, Tony Donoghue with Chief Football Officer Mark Canham. And a very broad question, Alan. We could spend the rest of the show. We're only chatting football up to about 6:30 now. We've rugby and Gaelic games to get to as well. But just in terms of listening to Mark there, we talk even about the funding that's been there. 41 million, it's good. And there's large-scale sports infrastructure fund to come as well, which hopefully will benefit not only League of Ireland clubs, but grassroots clubs across the board as well. From listening to Mark and hearing what he's saying there, are you positive? Can you feel there is hope for Irish football going forward across the board, in my most broadest question I've ever probably put to you?
I think it's, to be fair to Mark Hannum, I think when he does speak, and it's very rare that we do hear from him, he's only kind of done a couple of selective interviews really, and one of those was the in-house one. He speaks very well and he comes across very professional and probably says the right things in business speak. But I suppose the rate at which we need progress and improvement, Shane, we want it now. We want it yesterday, basically, you know. And that's the problem, is that whilst he's saying there's a lot of stuff going on in the background, I'm sure there is. I'm sure there's plenty going on in the background in terms of the pathway plan and what they've earmarked as kind of priorities in that. I'm sure there's loads and loads of work, but because we see, I suppose, the international team struggling a couple of weeks ago in the games, you see the Dundalk story, there's a story recently Neil O'Riordan had over the women's football as well in Meath.
At grassroots level, does that suffocate any positivity?
Absolutely, yeah. Not even suffocate the positivity, it's just, it's more bad news stories, if you like. So when you're trying to, as you say, you're asking me, can you be inspired by what he's saying? You can't really, but that's, I wouldn't say that's all down to him in terms of the fact that probably the stuff he's telling us, I would believe, but it's just that it's probably not the stuff that we want to be hearing in terms of seeing change. And that's the key thing of it all, Shane, is that because it's probably so slow to happen, we want to see things visibly nearly, you know, and because it's going to take time. You mentioned obviously the grants that were allocated today and all that, and all that is positive, but we need more and more of that stuff, you know. And the money that's been divvied out amongst the clubs, and there's a list of them there and you read them out, that's brilliant, and there's more to come, as you say, but they need even double, treble, quadruple that, especially at a League of Ireland level, if we're ever going to get to the stage, I suppose, where we want
the money
to be
isn't there to double and quadruple. To get 41 million, I think.
Yeah, and that's,
we have to give credit to the FEI in that regard as well. For I'm sure that the clubs are being backed and being sponsored and being advised, you would imagine, by the governing body as well.
Yeah, I know Walter that does a lot of the kind of help in terms of the process, Walter Holleran, and he deserves credit because that's his role in the FEI. And in terms of the application process, that's. They're working hand in hand on that, Shane, and they need help, the clubs, because for a long time the clubs weren't actually availing of these grants as well, and were shooting themselves in the foot. So when you see, obviously, now that they're aware of this, that awareness has to come from somebody obviously tipping them off or telling them or helping them. And that's what Walter has been doing, and good luck to him and fair play to him. But it's more and more of what we need. Hopefully it's a start. As you says, the problem with the likes of these grants, and the government will take credit, and I think Thomas Byrne was out today saying it's unprecedented, the amount of money, and I'm sure it is. When you look back at previous grants, it was never of the same kind of financial state, but because the demand is so desperate for us in Irish football, Shane, we do want more, because when you look at those figures, they'll make changes at certain aspects of clubs, but they're probably small changes. And I'm looking at maybe the bigger picture in Irish football, and what I want to see is obviously the League of Ireland stuff take shape in terms of facilities and stuff like that. But of course, as we keep saying and as we keep reiterating over and over in these conversations, it's going to take huge money.
And it's going to take time as well. We could be having a similar conversation or a different conversation when the LSS IF grants are actually announced and confirmed in due course as well. But looking at just what we know today, and that is basically the regional grants, the equipment grants, that all fall under the Sports Capital programme. So it is positive news for Dundalk, and by God, did they need it. Just over €454,000 of a max €500,000 granted for Oriel floodlights and a new Astro. St. Pat's Home Farm, Cork City, all getting under €1,000 for sports equipment and facilities and machinery upgrade and so on. Finn Harps getting just under 400 for girls Astro. So again, that's regional base, which is a wholly positive. Wexford getting equipment and regional grant just under 374,000. Bows are in line to just get under $500,000. That's without talking about any potential funding for Dalymount Park or potential funding for Talla Stadium and perhaps other clubs that aren't included in this. The likes of Shelburne might avail of the broader and different packages under different grants as well. But for your own Sligo as well, like 376,000 facility upgrades at Showgrounds, how Sligo Rovers is run should be just the benchmark for so many League of Ireland.
Yeah, and they released a video as well, Shane, today. I'm not sure if you've seen it, of the company that's helping them out, obviously, with the floodlights installation as well. And it's a really good, positive video, and it just goes to show the work that's been done. And a lot of that, again, the problems that we face in Irish football at maybe League of Ireland level is because they're firefighting so much. The worry I would have when you're looking at that figure, which at Dundalk, which looks like a big lump sum compared to the other clubs, is that's going to probably go towards saving them, and it won't go towards the floodlights, which is the worry you would have, and that's all.
Now,
and that's always a problem.
I'm sure there are.
Is there funds being ring fenced towards what they're being said, and hopefully they are, and that should be the case. But that's always the worry for clubs when you are firefighting so much. But the likes of all the other ones with the upgrades that it says is going towards the facilities, brilliant. That's great stuff.
Mm. And I think that I would imagine there are going to be stipulations if you are granted this, that this will have to be spent on for what.
But again, the sad thing about the Dundalk thing, Shane, is the money that this and Aaron, and you mentioned Sligo Rovers, and I know this for a fact, even being from Sligo and attending the Showgrounds, they were allocating money towards the development of the ground over the years, and at one stage it was to the detriment of the team, whereas you look at the success Dundalk had on the pitch over the years and the money, and yet the ground is still like they're crying out for money for their funding just to do up the floodlights. That should have been done themselves. So you can't pin it all on the FEI. Like some of the clubs have to take responsibility as well.
Absolutely. I just mentioned Waterford, the RC, and Kerry, Mount Hawk Park, and the leagues as well, getting some funding as well. So it is positive in that regard. There is Europa League action going on this evening. Troy Parrott is starting for AZ Alkmaar to give them their proper title. They're at home to Elfsborg. However, Alkmaar are losing 1-0 at the moment. 33 minutes gone in that one. Bodo Glimt and FC Porto were drawing 1-1. In terms of this evening, the 8 o'clock kickoffs, Lazio are in Kyiv, away to Dinamo Kyiv. Anderlecht hosts Ferencváros. Galatasaray hosts PAOK Hoffenheim, away to Midtjylland. Ludogorets, Slavia Prague, and Nice Real Sociedad. However, I mentioned at the top of the show, the Erik ten Hag derby, Manchester United against FC Twente. Ten Hag, of course, a former player, former captain, and indeed a fan of FC Twente. He used to stand on the terraces with the diehard ultras, so he did.
He looks a bit like an ultra, doesn't he?
Yeah, he has a bit about him. He's a footballing nerd, apparently. Andy Mitten actually spoke very well in the podcast I was listening to about Ten Hag's relationship with the club and everything that goes
back. He had three stints, wasn't it, as a player there? So that's obviously as well a lovely story, and I'm sure that'll be nice for him tonight, but the most important thing is to get the victory, Shane. But I think they will, because you look at... I suppose the European campaign, if you could call that, last year was a bit of a damn squib going out in the earlier part of the Champions League. And even since Ferguson has left, there's been four seasons in that 11 that the Europa League has followed the Champions League season, and that's not always a good sign. But that's, I think that's Man United's level at the moment. When you look at the team and what they have on the pitch and where they're playing, I think the Europa League is their level. I don't think they're anywhere near the Champions League level, particularly the later stages of the Champions League. So it could be a competition where they could kind of do very well in. I think they're one of the favourites to win it, along with Spurs. So you would expect them to get off to a good start tonight. I think they're record in the last 24 games in that competition as well. They've won 18 and drawn 5, so that speaks well for them. And I would expect that home tonight against Twente, who haven't been in a main draw UEFA competition since 2013-14, I would expect them to get the job done tonight, Man United.
Yeah, I think they've lost a couple of players as well. You can have your Feyenoord, Ajax, PSV, and then FC Twente might be the most popularly supported team. Lost a couple of players to Rangers, then he proper left as well. Ricky van Wolfswinkel, do you remember him in Premier League a bit? He played for Norwich, I think 34-year-old off the top of my head, plays for Twente, amongst
You're
other players.
You're a footballing nerd, aren't you, Shane, talking to footballing nerds?
Ricky Van.
Eric Ten Hag.
Who doesn't know
Shane
Ricky
Dawson.
Van Wolfswinkel? Come on, Alan. We pay you the big bucks.
Of course I know a big Wolfswinkel.
Come here, on a serious note, how much do United need a bit of a European run, considering that a big win in the League Cup, granted against lesser opposition, but how their league campaign has gone so far?
Yeah, I think they do need a change, because they're not going to win the league, and he... nearly needs silverware to save his job, you would think, or some sort of a successful run in a couple of the competitions, so FA Cup, League Cup, and this competition. And that's what saved his job, obviously, coming the end of last season as well in the FA Cup. So I definitely think it can't be a case of like last year where they went out of Europe on a whimper, when they were in the, was it the qualifying group with Bayern Munich, Copenhagen and Galatasaray,
yeah,
and ended up going out. So I think this competition should serve them very well, and I think they should be obviously looking to go as far as you can and try and win it, Shane. There's no reason why, when you look at the teams that are in that competition, the Europa League, why they can't go very, very far in it. I mentioned Spurs as well are in it. The likes of Porto, who are playing at the moment against Bodo Glimt, it's a 1-1 draw. Lazio, Galatasaray, Pauk, like Man United should be doing very well in this competition when you look at the teams that are in it. So I definitely think it's something that they should focus heavily on. I was listening to comments as well around Postecoglou and something similar with them, because they're not going to win the league either, and they're desperate for a trophy for try and win a competition, Spurs. So I think both of those clubs should be trying to go as far as possible in this and effectively try and win it.
Speaking of Ange, actually, both Ange Postecoglou and Tottenham captain Sun Heung-min have both insisted the growing football schedule must be addressed. Now, I put this almost tongue-in-cheek to Paul Curry on the show last week as well. About, we were talking about the amount of Champions League football that we have now, the amount of Europa League football that we have, and I was like, geez, is it a bit much? And Paul was like, well, I enjoy watching football. And I enjoy watching football as well. I enjoy watching Ricky van Volswinkel play 25 times for Norwich over 3 years and a few others as well. But the likes of, we can almost become saturated. But then from a player welfare point of view, which is what Ange is getting, obviously, Rodri injury, which was perhaps a freak accident or a freak injury as such. You can't put it down to playing minutes or anything like that. Like, do we need to address the amount of football that is being
played? Yeah, I listened today your chat with Paul, and I would agree with Paul on a lot, but not on this.
Okay.
And I would agree that I like watching football and Paul likes watching football.
51552 if you're listening, Paul Curry, but go on.
We all love watching football, but certainly from a player's perspective, and I think Ruby was chiming in as well, that the usual about, oh, to get well looked after, to get well paid. And that's all fine and fair and well, and we all understand that. But they're not robots either, Shane. And I think there's two sides of this, really. One is the aspect in terms of the player welfare, as you say, and what harm it's doing to them. And it's bound to be doing them harm when they're playing continuously, when you think they're bouncing into major tournaments. And you look at next year as well, there's the FIFA Club World Cup. There's going to be another tournament after a league domestic season as well, which these clubs, I'm talking about the top players now, these clubs are looking at playing 55, 60 games a season when you're challenging in every competition as well. That's one side which I think definitely has to be looked at. And then the second side of it is, for us who love watching the top teams and the top players, the spectacle is definitely going to be hampered or affected by the fact that we're demanding a brilliant match every time we flick on the television, or brilliant performances from the top players every time we put on a match. Yet if they're being asked to play 3-4 games in the space of 10 days, like, they're not robots. So I definitely think, for all the people that will say, of course, they're on get huge money, they get well looked after, probably better looked after than they ever have right now, I get all that, but they're not robots. And certainly in terms of the calendar, and again, it goes back to something we're talking about, the Europa League tonight. If Frank is listening, who wrote me a lovely letter about the Champions League and why he's disagreeing with my thoughts on the new look Champions League, Shane, and it was a lovely letter, Frank. Here's another reason why, again, what all this kind of filters into is effectively just UEFA and FIFA looking for more money, more revenue, more games, more money spinners. That's why you see the Champions League enhanced to 36 teams, more games. Frank's point was the fact that you're going to have to play all these games just to rule out 16 teams. And he's right in a way, but that's the world we live in, Shane. And unfortunately, the ones who suffer in all this are the players.
Valid points from Frank. Valid points from Alan Colley. So it's a flash in the pan that we get an Arsenal City match, which was a bit of a cracker.
Brilliant match.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's a flash in the pan, but it's only early in the season, so they're fresh at the moment as well. And we do get good games, but I thought it was brilliant. And I've heard a lot of criticism about Arsenal, but
I'd be 100% with you. What are we criticising?
There's only one man in the world who I'd never have a bad word said about, ever, and I disagree with him. Roy Keane at the weekend was saying, I needed to see more from Arsenal. I'm thinking, we did see more when it was 11v11. They were brilliant. And they showed City when they went to goal down and bounced back.
They were pragmatic in the second half.
Absolutely. And did exactly what they needed to do in terms of their defensive shape and defensive structure. And another thing that's missed in modern day football as well, Shane, is defending is one of the most important parts of the game. Mm-hmm. Simeone had a brilliant article there a few weeks ago, and he gets slaughtered for his defensive negative stuff and sometimes the dark arts. And again, he might overstep the mark the odd time, but his teams are set up so well defensively, and I love that because that's part of the game. Now, what Arsenal have, and I think what's probably different to Simeone's teams or maybe Mourinho teams when he was very negative, Arsenal can do the other side as well. They're unbelievable in possession, and just the fact that they go away to Spurs or Man City without your best player in terms of Odegaard and Rice against Spurs, I know they had Rice on Sunday, and set up against the Man City team, particularly when they're down to 10 men, and get so well set up across the back, and you have three sitting in front of the six and leaving everything to Ruben Diaz and Kovacic. I would actually, for the first time, be critical of Guardiola and his tactics, because they were so toothless in that second half and literally did the same thing over and over and over, going over and back and over and back. Why didn't at one stage they drop Foden out to the edge of the box, that he would be the one taking the shots instead of Kovacic or Ruben Diaz all the time? There was never an overlap. Not once did Vardy all go round. I know Grealish came on late, but never once did he go down the side and try and create an overlap or a 2v1 situation, which normally Man City are good at. Bernardo Silva was out on the right hand side, left footed player, cutting in on his left all the time. So in many aspects, for the praise I'm giving Arsenal, they actually made it easy for them as well, Shane, in what they were doing. So, but I thought Arsenal were brilliant. You know, I've tipped them for the league. They're going to be there. They're going to be there, Shane. They are. And Guardiola knows they're a major threat. And that's why you see the feistiness and the rivalry. Because the only time you get your back up against a rival like that is when you know you're being threatened. And you see Haaland throwing the ball and Gabriel. And there's going to be fisticuffs yet, Shane. And I can't wait to see it.
I am so happy. Frank has texted in and he's corrected you. I'm listening, Alan. 144 games to eliminate 12 teams, not 16.
Well, come on, Frank. But I read your letter, and Frank's a great man. And we're allowed to disagree and we're allowed to agree. This is what I love about it. But he's right in a way. But the point I would say to Frank, and it did need freshening up, which was my initial point, is this is the world we live in. And unfortunately, FIFA, UEFA, it's all commercially run. Money, more games. The players suffer. We might think as though we're getting the best of it because we see a lot more games. But I definitely think the spectacle is hampered by the fact that they're asked to play so much as well.
Alan Colley, gentleman as always. We didn't even get to go through. Rafael Varane announced his retirement of football. We wish him well, because it does surround actually concussion issues that he suffered throughout his career. And Republic of Ireland international striker Aaron Connolly is signed for championship side Sunderland.
And Frank has beautiful handwriting.
On that note, we're taking a break. Alan Colley, get out of the studio. We're talking about handwriting at this stage. Colm Keyes is up next with the latest Gaelic game stories.
Game on.
GAA.
Now, Colm Keyes, GA correspondent with the Irish Independent, joins us now to chat through all the latest Gaelic game stories. And earlier on in the show, I mentioned the funding coming from government for sports, all sports really. But GA clubs and counties are said to be the biggest beneficiaries from the Community Sport Facilities Fund after the government announced they will receive close to 97 million of the 230 million funding. Colm, in terms of county boards, what stands out most here for you?
I think it's just the sheer scale of it. First of all, from the government, 230 million and another 20 something million in equipment that has already been distributed. So the sheer scale of it, first of all, the investment in sport right across the board, Shane, it really, really jumps out. It's a doubling from 2020. They've lifted the ceilings, 500,000 for regional, 200,000 for more locals. So the ceiling on that is up to 200,000 for a lot of GAA clubs, and a lot of GAA clubs have got the maximum as well. And there are many further developments in six figures, actually. The vast majority are in six figure territory. They're either, you know, from 100,000 up to the 200,000 maximum in that regard. And obviously at regional level as well. For instance, the Clare GAA Centre of Excellence in Carrigaloe, and this 478,000 put against an all-weather pitch there. And all-weather pitches really, really stand out here. The number of clubs and county boards who are now going after that, because obviously there are volume issues, traffic issues in terms of the number of teams now seeking to use these facilities on an all-year-round basis. And I think with integration coming down the tracks too. But this is very much the way forward, and I think the capital grant scheme recognises that, that you know, there is a need now for 4G pitches, for those all-weather pitches, to keep them busy all year round and not have them so weather-dependent, as the obviously turf is when the weather disimproved. But right across the board, the level of development, and obviously GAA clubs have got very, very good at being able to navigate this process to get that money and how to tap in and receive. And obviously some other sports will look at that and say, well, they've 97 million out of 230,000 or 230 million or 250 million. It's around the 40% mark. It's a huge chunk of it. But a lot of GAA clubs have their own facilities and continue to develop them as much as possible. And that really reflects that. Whereas some other sports that are really further down the ladder in terms of development and progress and are really only setting out, they're probably handicapped in that regard, and that they don't have their own facilities to be able to develop them. So it's more on the equipment side that they get their grants. So therefore, GAA clubs, they're better at navigating. It looks to me as if they're better at navigating, and also that they have their own facilities. But looking across the board, soccer clubs, League of Ireland soccer clubs on a regional basis, have done very well as well. But obviously, the eye-catching figure, 97 million, when you put that on top of the large-scale sports infrastructure fund that is funding developments from St. Conmud's Park to Walsh Park in Waterford, Park Talton and Navan coming down the line, there's big investments there as well. Certainly from a state point of view, the GAA are doing pretty well. Not to mention potentially the 50 million going into 50 million euro going into Casement Park, which could rise to. So they've done very well.
Yes, very much so. Incremental improvements as well. There's six-figure sums for the likes of floodlights in Pier Stadium for Galway, McHale Park in Mayo, in Clonus, even McNeville Park in Rathkeale. So good news for plenty of county boards. Perhaps bad news for Offaly fans, because Michael Deignan and fellow Offaly GAA officers are stepping down after a five-year reign. A successful five-year reign?
Very much so. Obviously a lot of high-profile sponsorship deals, number one, but obviously some success. Very good success for Offaly, and obviously terrific dual county Offaly. All-Ireland Under-20 hurling this year, All-Ireland Under-21 football 3 years ago happened on Michael Deignan's reign. Now, it should be said, the bedrock for that and the foundations for that were put in long before Michael assumed chair. But I think for context, in 2019, clearly unhappy at the direction his county was taking, rather than talk about it, he decided to walk it as well and put himself probably a left field appointment in that he wouldn't have had a strong administrative footprint. We obviously know him as an analyst with RTE and a former hurler and indeed a manager for a couple of years as well at one stage, but chiefly as a co-commentator with RTE is where his profile has been predominantly. But he decided to do something about it. He didn't like the direction it was taking, and himself and a number of like-minded fellow officials sought positions in 2019, won most of them, and took on the project of overhauling it as best they could. And it would be fair to say that they have done a very good job in terms of, you know, sourcing extra coaching and liaising with schools. Now, all of that, there was some of that in place already, but I think the sponsorship deals and the general veneer of positivity that was generated through Offaly GAA as well, obviously backed by the success of those underage teams. But Michael's 5 years are up. He indicated at the county board meeting on Monday night that he wouldn't be performing musical chairs. Sometimes officials go into another position, maybe secretary chair. And he himself, or those other key officials, he had secretary and treasurer, they're very much aligned with him as well. They've decided not to move around. So that will leave something of a vacuum and something of a drain and filling those positions. It's a challenge for every county. Offaly clearly have been lucky to get the calibre of person they've had in there over the last 5 years. But their five-year terms now are up, the vast majority of them, and they've decided to move on while making themselves available, but they won't be the key decision makers from over the next few years. And And that's obviously, that'll be a disappointment to many in Offaly who have enjoyed the level of progress that has been there since 2019.
For Mayo County Board, they have no gaps to fill because they have confirmed the reappointment of Kevin McStay to continue in his role for 2025. As expected?
Very much as expected. It's just what wasn't expected is, well, for the way I would see it, it took so long to get there. Now, there may have been internal reasons. Maybe Kevin wasn't available or some key officers may not have been available early in the summer, and that's understandable. But a process like this really should be done much quicker than it was in Mayo, and I think they left it linger there for a long time. There was a suggestion and a suspicion that maybe some backroom team change was being sought, that maybe some of the coaches, it was felt, and even from a player point of view, that was widely ventilated up there, that perhaps change was required here. But it seems Kevin McStay stuck to his guns. He wants the same team that he has had predominantly last year anyway, and certainly last year. And there were Stephen Rochford and Donny Buckley have been with him, and Damien Mulligan from the outset over the last 2 years. And he clearly wanted to take on them and to stick with them for next year as well. But the process did take a long time. There was a review, and even the nature of the way that they announced he would be continuing on, and that left a suggestion that there was doubt as to whether he would. Whereas I don't think there was, and maybe there shouldn't have been either, because Mayo, they're a bit away, but they're close enough to, and I think all those teams in Division 1 next year of the Allianz League will feel after Armagh's when anything here is possible. Are Mayo that far away from Armagh? Of course they're not. They'd see themselves very much as equals, very much equipped in the same way, and it may not take much change, you know, to put them back into the frame again. So I think Kevin McStay is probably destabilised a little bit by the length of time it took to rubber stamp him, or to, you know, to serve that notice over the weekend that he would be continuing into 2025, even though his original agreement with Mayo was to take him to 2026. Obviously, every county's entitled to review, and players must be tapped into as well for their opinions. But I would have thought, given the nature of the results, they weren't too far away in any of the key games that they didn't win. And remember, they only lost one to Galway, and that was in deep and added time with a pretty contentious free. They drew the Derry game, lost on penalties, and they obviously drew at Dublin as well. That's form that would suggest that Mayo are right in there, tucked in behind the chasing pack. So from that point of view, upheaval could never, such upheaval as to remove a manager and maybe even some of the key backroom team. There may be some additions brought in at this stage, perhaps that might be, they might be open to that. But I just feel the delay it took and some of the commentary around it at county board meetings and whatever else has left it open far too much.
Colm, I know you've been writing about all of those stories in the Irish Independent, and indeed the final story I'm going to throw at you before I do let you go. Nadine Doherty actually had a great piece in the Sunday Independent on this as well. And All-Ireland Ladies Football Finals remaining on the August Bank Holiday now in 2025 to align with the GA's inter-county season. But how detrimental is that to crowd numbers for Ladies Football Finals?
Well, Nadine did reflect that in her piece over the weekend. She did reflect that maybe the LGFA and perhaps even Camogie would be better stretching their season further on and detaching it a little bit from the inter-county, the GA season, because really some of the big ladies games are a little bit consumed on weekends. You have semi-finals on, the football semi-finals on the same weekend as the hurling final on the Saturday. So they don't enjoy the same level of profile or notoriety that they should be getting. And consequently, Nadine's opinion, and maybe that's a generally held opinion, that crowds as a consequence of are suffering more in the ladies, that they haven't got that degree of separation. And, you know, obviously there's club commitments to figure out as well, but they may not be as great as they are in GA. The volume of teams is not as great. LGFA teams are not as great as GA and Camogie consequently as well. So maybe there is a little bit more room to push the season out into the other weekends in August and give them a little bit more autonomy. But LGFA decided that they would stick to the same schedule as last year, and that's the All-Ireland Finals taking place a week after the All-Ireland Football Final. Whereas maybe if they had the semi-finals on that weekend and stretch out the final. Now, obviously, there's a concert issues in Croke Park as well to factor in that very much August and into September has become concert time and a very big generator of revenue for the GAA's attendances are maybe tapering off a little bit, that this is where they're going to source more and more revenue, because obviously AC/DC and Coldplay have played there in recent weeks, and that's a big generator at a time when maybe semi-finals and finals would have been played. So, you know, that they are a little bit tied by that in how far they can stretch in. Obviously, the finals are going to be played in Croke Park. So, you know, the semi-finals, they're caught up. The quarter-finals, semi-finals are caught up on some of the busiest weekends of GAA, and maybe people lose sight of them a little bit.
Perhaps. For now, Colm Keyes. Gentlemen, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Colm Keyes, GAA correspondent with the Irish Independent.
Game on. Rugby.
Now, later in the week, we'll preview Ireland's opening match in the WXV1 series as they take on New Zealand in Canada in the early hours of Monday morning. But we thought we'd check in on both camps today. RTE Sports' Michael Glennon has been speaking to Irish flanker Aoife Wafer. But first, here's what Black Ferns player Chris Villico and Black Ferns assistant coach Tony Christie had to say.
What have you made of Ireland over the last 12 months under Scott Beamond?
Yeah, I think that they've progressed hugely. They led the Six Nations in terms of kick metres, and average kick metres. So they've got a great kicking game, putting in the right field. And then in terms of their ruck speed on attack, they were also number one for ruck speed. Put those two things combined around playing in the right areas and playing at tempo and pace, I think they've developed really well.
Christy, when you're doing your homework for this game, is there particular front rows that you're keeping an eye out? Do you have clips to check out the techniques of the players you're coming up against?
I think just the whole front row or the whole pack as a whole is quite exciting to come up against. In terms of homework, we just look at a photograph or we look at our huddle clips and see what we can do as a side that work on our strengths. So just focusing on ourselves
And is there any players in particular for either of you that, you know, there have been some former Irish players, is there anyone that you're looking at to go that's the threat in the Ireland team, or there's a couple of players that if we, you know, focus on those and neutralise those, maybe that Ireland have built their game around them, that's the key to, you know, keeping Ireland quiet?
Yeah, I think first of all, their first five, massive left boot. So disrupting the quality ball she gets and the pressure on her will mean hopefully we're playing in the right areas and more chances to counterattack. And then also their 6/8 and the red headgear, very quick off the back of the scrum. So a couple of threats we've identified there. As we said earlier, Ireland's progressing really nicely, so it's going to be a good battle on the weekend.
Well, the 6/8 in the red headgear that Tony Christie is referring to is, of course, Aoife Wafer, and she was speaking to Michael Glennon.
How much are you enjoying your rugby at the moment? You just look like you're having the time of your life. You're well able to deal with tacklers coming at you. What's it feel like for you game by game?
Yeah, it's very exciting, isn't it? I'm loving it. Yeah, I've always been brought up on in terms of you play your best when you're just having a bit of fun, and that's what I'm definitely trying to do. I'm just trying to take in every moment, and I suppose when I was out with injury, obviously it wasn't the nicest place to be, so to be able to go out and play with this incredible group of girls and just be able to enjoy every moment is something that I'm really proud of and really grateful for.
You'll be doing a lot of homework on the Black Ferns as well, but I guess on the other side, when they are looking for the danger players for Ireland, you're going to be one of them. I mean, is there any preparation you can do if you think you're going to be targeted, which I guess if they're doing their homework, they're going to say, who do we stop here? Is there extra work, or how do you deal with maybe being the one with a target on your back?
I suppose I just kind of focus on myself and what I can keep doing to be better for the girls, because at the end of the day, it's a team. So if they're going to focus on me and leave off the likes of our other threats, then I'm happy to get smashed in a tackle if it means Lee is down the wing and scoring a try under the post. I think we have a numerous amount of threats on our team, and they're scattered all throughout the park, 1 to 15 and even at that 1 to 23, because the girls that came off the bench last week, they made some impact. I wouldn't like to be hit by some of them. And then outside of that, like, there's, we have a whole squad of 30 now, but there's girls there from 1 to 40 something of us who have pushed to put that green jersey in a better place. So I think if they're focusing on me, they're going to be leaving someone else loose. There's a whole team of us.
What's your favourite part about rugby on the field? Would you rather hit a big tackle, make a big tackle, score a great try, score a pushover try? What's the best buzz?
Well, out of the options, probably the pushover try, because it means that everyone's kind of involved, and the buzz that we got at the kind of, what was it, 79th, 80 minute try against the Wallaroos was pretty special. And yeah, like, I think I'd much rather take the team kind of element than my own, because, like, anything I do is for the girls. And yeah, like, I think that'd be my answer. Yeah, of the three options you gave me, anyway.
Just on goal setting there, like, Scott wanted to win a WX V3, and that was done. And then the goal from the Six Nations was a third place finish. That was done. When you set up, when you head to Canada, is your goal set that you can think, right, let's put that down and we'll be able to tick it off? Or how do you go about that when you're going to step up against a team that are kind of acknowledged as on another level?
Yeah, like, I suppose we'll have our own internal goals, and then, like, we'll have targets set out for each game that we'll hold ourselves accountable to as well. But yeah, like, you can't ignore the fact that New Zealand are world champions. Like, they've beat New Zealand in the World Cup final, or England in the World Cup final, and obviously England won then at the weekend, and then we have Canada who beat New Zealand in the Pac Four, and then you've USA who beat the Wallaroos as well. So, like, it's all up in the air at the minute, and like, I think it's just a really exciting time for Irish rugby, because we're going in and we're playing the best in the world in a World Cup year. So when it comes to the World Cup, we won't have any kind of shocks of, oh my God, we're standing in front of a haka. It'll kind of be like, okay, we've all been here before, because the only people that have stood in front of a haka is Cliona Maloney and Nicole Fowley. So the rest of us are all new to playing them.
When you were growing up, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, Irish rugby at this level, there was in an awful state. There was letters going in, there was protests, there was players exiled. Was there any chance that you were looking at that going, there's really not much of a future there? I know you would have been younger, but maybe your trajectory could have been towards that direction. Was there any time you're thinking, you know, that it's not a camp, it's not a setup that looks appealing from the outside?
No, I always wanted to play for Ireland. Yeah, no, since I was 6 and I picked up a rugby ball, I wanted to play for Ireland. So I think yeah, all of that happened. But my goal was still to get into a green shirt. Like, no matter what was happening, I wanted to represent my country and to try to do it proud and leave the jersey in a better place. And, like, to be able to have so many role models come through an Irish shirt is something that I was really grateful for, because you have the likes of Fi Coughlan, Claire Malloy, and even, like, you look at Cliona Maloney and Nick Fowley, like, who've been there for a while. Like, they were all role models to me, and, like, growing up with that team, I nearly felt like I was the biggest fangirl in the world, like, because I just followed the team everywhere, whether that was Ashburn or wherever it was. Like, and like, I literally have a jersey that I got when I was 10 from Goose, the old head coach, and it's signed by the 2013 Grand Slam winning team, and it's hung above my bed ever since I've had it. So I think, yeah, that's always been my goal.
To play for Ireland. And it'll be a long time before you do leave the jersey, please God. But yeah, no, you seem to be absolutely loving it. I mean, and life outside of that, you're studying as well.
Yeah, studying physiotherapy in UCD. So thankfully, they make quite a lot of allowances for me to go to Canada for let's say a month. They work really well with me, and you have the likes of the Al Ashter scholarship that helped me hugely. And it's my first kind of rugby experience in an Irish jersey where I'm not studying at the exact time, because my class are all on placement. So it's nice to be able to completely just focus on rugby and just enjoy every second.
We will be previewing that and all of the weekend's rugby in due course. Just to bring you up to date with the early kickoffs in the Europa League, as at Alkmaar have taken the lead against Elsberg. They were 1-0 down. They now lead 2-1. Unfortunately, Troy Parrott not on the score sheet as of yet. 52 minutes played in that one. And Bodo Glimt lead FC Porto at home by 2-1 as well. 51 minutes gone in that tie as well. Speaking of big ties, Wexford host league leaders Athlone Town at 7:45 this evening in Ferry Carrig. A huge match in the League of Ireland Women's Premier Division. So if you are in the Wexford area, do get down to that one. Should be a cracker. We'll be reviewing that one and all of the rest of the women's football stories tomorrow with Rebecca Cray. Earlier on in the show, I did ask who the Europa League winners were. Was it Atalanta or Blackburn Rovers? Of course, the answer was Atalanta. They're the current Europa League champions and to be entered into the draw to win EA Sports FC 25. And a massive congratulations to Sean Egan from Tipperary, who gave us the correct answer of Atalanta as the current Europa League champions. If you missed out today, tune in tomorrow when there, of course, will be another chance to win a copy of EA Sports 25. We'll chat you then at 6 o'clock. The new music show is up next from All The Game On Team. It is. Bye for now.